got your coffee?
I got my coffee. I'm good to go.
Oh, good. Good. Mine is in a warming mug and it's already getting cold, and that's not a good sign. It's not a good sign. How are you this morning?
My normal chipper surly self. How are you?
I'm hanging in. I'm hanging in. I have a little work today. I have to replace some of the paneling on the front of my dishwasher. So that's fun.
Paneling on your dishwasher? What is this, 1974?
Yeah. Well, my son, I don't know how he did this, but he broke like the handle, which is just a piece of plastic, cracked last week, and rather than buy a new dishwasher, I managed to find the parts. So I've taken off the whole handle mechanism, and the thing still works, but you're seeing the whole computer interface, which I've also replaced a few years ago. Do you remember the Fembots episode of The Bionic Woman?
Of course.
I mean, that gave me nightmares. That was terrifying. That's what my dishwasher looks like right now. Especially, like, I came downstairs this morning. It was still dark out, and I had run the dishwasher overnight, so all the lights are on. And you just see, like, the bottom is all black where the facing is still there. And the top just has all these red lights, and things are blinking, and there's wires. And it I feel like it's going to come to life and come after me.
It's high science. That's technology. People pay a lot of money for those special effects.
I guess, but all I can think of, and then of course I'm telling my daughter, and I pulled up a picture of the Fembots from The Bionic Woman, and she's like, okay, I understand why you had nightmares about this and why you're afraid of our dishwasher. So pretty much as soon as we're done recording here, I need to put the facing back on that dishwasher because I'm a little scared being down here and not knowing what's going on upstairs with my Transformer Fembot dishwasher.
I thought you were going to say Fembots from Austin Powers. That's where I thought you were going.
No, I'm talking about the ones from the classic Bionic Woman episode where their faces come off and
of
you
course,
just see
yes.
eyeballs and mm-hmm. scary stuff. No, the ones in Austin Powers were a little less scary and a little more fantasy oriented, if I recall.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. No, this I have no fantasies about my dishwasher. I'm just afraid of it.
And there's the bumper.
All right, so I just had to share that with you and everyone else who wants to listen to me babble on about
two other people,
the Bionic Woman. Yes.
Yeah, that's fine.
So go watch the Fembots episode.
Yeah, or at least, you know, look it up on YouTube and watch the 22-second clip of having their faces removed.
Yes. Oh, I still get nightmares. Of all the things to upset a grown man, my dishwasher turning into a Fembot was not something I had on the list of you know, I don't like spiders, you know, I'm sometimes afraid of riding my bike in the road, but dishwasher was not on the list of things I'm afraid of at this point in my life.
Well, good to know.
Yeah.
Moving on.
He's like, and we'll start the actual editing at 3.5 minutes.
Mark.
Okay. What are we going to talk about today? So we're small and medium scale hop growing. Everyone starts somewhere, and it's usually with a plant or two in the backyard, and they do it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
All by themselves. And then
one day, myself.
Yep. And when what do we talk about? You know, your labor is not free.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely not free.
No.
Your labor is probably the most expensive labor you've got.
Yep. It's opportunity cost labor.
Mm-hmm.
What else could you be doing? So many things. So many things, like fixing a dishwasher. But what happens, when do you get to the point that you can figure out that it's time to spend money on labor, to pay people to help you?
That is probably, from a business perspective in hop growing, that is probably, in any small business, that is the biggest hurdle because you don't see it as value add.
Right. It's cost. It's pure cost.
Yeah. You see it as another expense until you've done it for a little while and you look back and say, okay, what if I wasn't paying that person to do that? You can't imagine running your business at the state it is at that point without paying those people to do stuff.
Yeah, I agree. You get to that point. It's one of those things where, oh, I can't believe I didn't spend this money sooner. And then it becomes a non-negotiable part of your business plan at that point. I must have this labor in place, and it costs what it costs.
Well, and I, you know, going back to the business plan, you've got a number in there. I mean, anybody who's interested in your business, banker, you know, a lender, investor, is going to look at it, and they're going to look at what your running costs are, your operating costs. And labor is a big part of that. And if you've got big zeros in there, they're going to be like, what's the plan here, right? It's like, don't be dumb. It's part of your business.
Yeah, that comes back to the, is this a business or a hobby? Mm-hmm. Because if you're doing it all in-house in your basement and you got your family, you know, down there, including the, you know, your 6-year-old granddaughter is pulling hops off of binds, that's, you know, we're going to call someone else and it's not the lending department.
Exactly. Hello, social services. This is not Bangladesh.
Mm-hmm. Their profit margins are fantastic. But...
Oh, yeah. Oh, of course.
and figuring out, it's... Can't stress enough how hard a decision that is to make. And we've had similar conversations around equipment, around mm-hmm. spending the money on equipment when it's time to do that. Oh, guess what? When you don't do that, you're using labor instead of technology to do the work for you. So
right, that you're spending that money somewhere. Mm-hmm. You're going to spend that money. And I paused there because I'm like, let's get off of the money thing first, because that's the first place everybody goes. Sure. I remember... way back, my first job out of graduate school, like my first hort job, was an orchard manager. And I was the first employee, full-time employee, that this couple had hired into their business. The guy that ran the place, they were both semi-retired, not quite fully retired, because they had to run their day jobs in order to fund their apple orchard, right? He was all in it, right? It was really his passion. And she was kind of like putting up with it. And it's like every time she looked at me, she just had this look in her eyes like, you're costing me so much money. And we never got over it. And that's one of the primary reasons I left that place, is because all they would think about is how much money it was costing them, instead of thinking about how much money do I need to invest in order to make this company be successful.
Right.
And that money, it will ultimately all come down to cash flow. But stop thinking about it as pennies out of pocket and start thinking about it, you know, because you're not throwing those pennies to the wind. You're investing it. You know, employees are tools in your company, right? You invest in the best tools that you can with the idea that you're going to get the return out of them and that your investment was sound.
Mm-hmm. And that it will appreciate in value.
Correct.
Because they get better. And I mean, what's the worst thing every year with hiring day labor? It's retraining them and over and over again.
The worst. I hated that. So let's stop thinking about this as just money out of pocket. And let's start thinking about it as investing in the future of your company. Because what's this? You hire somebody. And I'm not talking like full out bringing them on board, giving them benefits and all that kind of stuff. Where do you start? You start with part-time people. Mm-hmm. You start with this idea of, I am going to exchange money for service. Very, very basic.
Very basic. Yeah.
Economic platform here. Fee for service. That's what you're doing. And what is it that you expect that person to do? Well, frankly, the thing that they usually have them doing are, you start them off with the most menial task and the crap you don't want to do. That's where they start. You're hiring. I don't know why people, they're just like, I got to pay somebody to do this. You know, for those of you who hate mowing your yard, you're like, I pay the neighbor kid to mow my yard because I hate mowing my yard. Mm-hmm.
Things, it comes back in my mind to opportunity cost and what things are there that are not worth your time anymore. They're just not worth your time to do, and it's worth it for you to shell out the money for someone else to do so you can do something else. Or so you can just not do that. Sometimes that's okay too.
But you've got to be able to get to that place in your own head.
Sure.
To be able to say, it's not worth my time to do this anymore. Because to make that first leap, you're still likely in that my time isn't worth anything. And you're still, the reason you haven't hired somebody is because you're struggling with this concept of paying somebody to do something that you could do yourself for nothing.
Right.
And if you can't get past that idea that your time isn't free, and actually your time is the single most expensive spend you have in your company, you're like paying 12 to 15 bucks an hour to have somebody out there doing the menial tasks in the hop yard is well worth your time. because, yeah, you could be out there doing it for, quote, free, but every minute you're in your hop yard hand weeding and doing what we would consider no value added work, given your skill set, you could be out selling. You could be out building your business. You could be out expanding your company's horizons, which is ultimately going to lead to more revenue and easily offset the pennies, relatively speaking, that you're paying somebody to do that menial labor that you considered free before.
Right, right. And there's menial labor, and there's another side of this too. There's the, I'll pay someone to do something that it's not worth my time to do. But there's also the aspect of, I need to pay someone to do something that they can do better than I can.
Agreed. Agreed. But I don't think that's where people start.
Probably not. You're probably not expanding your business past your own expertise at an early stage.
You know, as a small scale, even medium scale hop grower, you're not thinking, I'm hiring a diesel mechanic. Right? Because you're like, yeah, the tractor's over there, and sometimes I have problems with it, and I can kind of figure it out, or I can hire a service person to come in. You're not likely saying, okay, I've got an acre or 2 acres of hops, I'm going to hire a professional, you know, horticulturist. You're not likely doing that. What are you doing? You're like, I've got too much shit to do and not enough time to do it, so I need more hands to do this stuff.
Right. You don't need to hire a professional horticulturist. Just get on the Discord with us.
Exactly. Become a hopnologist.
Yeah. You have a professional horticulturist at your disposal.
You do. Yes. And he is worth every penny. Certainly for the woody repartee he brings.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. That is the best part.
Mm-hmm. But this idea that you don't have the resources to do to bring these people on board is a absolute fallacy. It's part of that sunk cost fallacy. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, you know, if you're not familiar with that, it's like, I'm not going to stop doing whatever I'm doing now, even if it's like suboptimal, because of all the money and time I've spent getting to this point.
Yeah.
That's dumb. Stop it. Pursuant to all of our pivot episodes we could talk about, right? Now you're at the point where you're saying, okay, let's just play the small scale side first. So let's say, and we're by small scale, I'm talking an acre to 2 acres. So at that point, you know that hop production is not your primary source of income, which means you're splitting your time between a day job and the hop yard and likely a family. So the most valuable thing you have in that equation is your time.
Sure.
And we've talked about how running a small business can suck up your time and destroy your relationships, because you get singularly focused on, I have to go do this. I have to keep this operation running because I started it. I don't want to be a failure, blah, blah, blah. Again, that's part of that sunk cost fallacy. And you start neglecting other things in your life. It's usually at that point when somebody, usually your significant other or partner or whomever, says, we need to have a talk. if you're such a successful, you know, hop grower, your business is really booming, you gotta start spending more time with the family. You gotta start fixing stuff around the house. You gotta be more present. So now you're realizing, oh, that time that was of my time that was, quote, free was not free. No, it wasn't free. You were going into debt in another area. So now what are you going to do? Well, the first thing you should do is like, well, hire some part-time labor. And that's where you start. You start at like part-time hourly people.
Right. Right. Just to get stuff done, usually standing right next to you. Mm-hmm. Very often it is, I can't do all this weeding myself, but if I had one or two people doing it alongside me, what was taking me 7 hours is now going to take 3. So you're not likely to hand over the reins to something without being on top of it at the very beginning.
Well, and that's part of being the owner and the boss, is you're just never going to kind of hand it over blankly. But the idea is that they are there to help you optimize your time as your own resource. Having that opportunity costs money. But the idea is that you're just moving around the spend. True. You are maybe not spending cash money out of pocket for all that time you were spending in your hop yard, but you were borrowing it at a deficit against, let's say, your family time.
Right.
That has arguably way, way, way more value than the pennies, the actual currency that you were going to pay. I'm sure your loved ones would also agree with that.
I'm wondering, as much as we talk about this, if we need another podcast for Hop Widows, like specifically a podcast for Hop Widows, and it can be a combination therapy and maybe, I don't know, Tinder type of thing.
Could feature my wife. She could give you all kinds of awful
exactly.
stories.
Yes. Exactly. There may be a market there. Mm-hmm. Interested in hearing our listeners' thoughts. If you've even thought about the, they're all now looking at their spouses going, uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
So just anyway, just these ideas just come into my head.
Making this first jump, that really is a point at which you say, I believe in this business. I know it can work. I am going to show it basically to everybody and stop propping it up with my own, quote, valueless time. And I'm going to pay somebody else to do some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Prove it, right? Show me that your business plan and your operation, your vision is solid enough to support you actually spending more money than just on Twine and paying somebody hourly to start to come in and help you. Hopefully you can invest in them and they can grow over time, which is what we did. You know, you hire somebody, you're like, okay, fine, 20 hours a week. And then it's 30, and then it's 40 hours a week hourly. And then it's like, wow, this person's really put that time in, but I don't want to lose them to the job market. So what do I need to do? Okay, well, 40 hours salary, you know, and any farm worker worth their snuff is like, yeah, I'm not going salary. What are you, nuts? plus benefits. You're right. But I don't want to get too far down that road, because people right now who are thinking that, yeah, I could use some help, and I start talking about benefits and retirement accounts are losing their mind right now.
Right, right. And honestly, I think that's probably a whole nother episode.
Oh, yeah,
structure
totally.
Structure employees in your checkbook and your accounting side
right,
of things.
Right.
But this is about that, as you keep saying, that tough hurdle of making the decision to go ahead and spend cash from your balance sheet on time. Mm-hmm. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. And that's okay. How do you get there? How do you make that okay? Well, usually it, frankly, is just as simple as, James, why's my yield suck? Well, show me some pictures. Holy hell, your weeds are higher than your hops. Why? Well, I don't have time to go out there and weed it. Then you don't have time to hop farm. Mm-hmm. So how are you going to gain that back? So don't tell me that, well, I'm not getting any yield, so it's not worth for me going out there and investing the time to do it. No, you've got to put the time in to get the yield to justify the time that you just spent. So that means many hands make light work. You're going to need to pay somebody to get out there and do it. I don't care what you're paying them. You're going to exchange a fee for service.
Right. And that service is you're buying hours in the day. Mm-hmm. There, you know, the one thing you can never reclaim is lost time, of course. And you can pay for a lot of things. You're actually buying hours in the day by getting employees in there to help with you.
It's time to hire your first part-time employee. How do you do this? Well, I don't know what the laws are in your country, but in the U.S., you know, the first thing you're usually looking at is you're saying, well, I'm just going to pay somebody hourly, right, to come in and do this. What does that mean for me? Well, you know, you advertise, you know, there's all sorts of places you can go to look for that. It's usually, you know, sometimes it's like, well, you know, my friend's child is looking for some extra cash, or you advertise in Craigslist or whatever. You've heard me talk about that. So just be cautious. One way or another, the first person you usually hire is someone that's relatively close to you, like within a social circle or something like that, and you're paying them hourly. And that's okay. You'll come to an agreement on what it's going to cost you to do that. What I can tell you is that you can't expect them, Greg, to your earlier point about working beside them, you can't expect to hire them in and just point and tell them to go do. Now you're also a boss. So they are looking to you for guidance. You have to decide on what kind of boss you're going to be, right? Are you a micromanager? Are you somebody that's very broad scope, that's just like, just go over there and do that. I've got to go over and do this other stuff. Keep in perspective what your people are going to need from you. Because if you're the hands-off kind of boss and you're expecting to have somebody walk in there and basically know what they're doing, expect to pay a whole lot more for them because they bring value for the time that they're there.
Mm-hmm. They'll be more efficient and they'll require less of your time, of your cost to get them ramped up, but you're paying for it. You're paying for it. So it depends on what you really want. The other thing, you know, you mentioned you're a boss now. Dealing with people, it's a whole nother level in terms of, you know, you've got expectations. Oh, they're sick. Mm-hmm. And the Mother Nature's clock doesn't wait for anyone.
Nope.
So you've got one more variable in your growing process now and in your business process that you didn't have before. And that's the variable of this person or people that, again, you're buying time with them, but you had a day coming up in front of you where you had 40 man hours worth of work you were going to get done with your various people, and something goes sideways and oop, I'm only going to get 30 of those hours. What has to fall? What doesn't get done today? So those are different types of managerial decisions you're going to end up having to make.
You're not selling it, Greg.
I'm not selling it. What do you mean I'm not selling it?
We're talking about, you got to hire your first people. Then we're like, oh, now you're the boss. And now if they're not there, you got to go out and do it. Those are the hard facts. I mean, you're ultimately, the buck stops with you, right? Ideally, those would be the outliers scenarios.
Ideally, but I don't.
It happens.
It happens, and it's something that it's not a plug and play, I guess is what I'm saying. Yep, I hired someone, and now X is going to get done every single day. Well,
oh, no.
No.
No, no, no.
I'm not trying to sell anything.
No, you can't expect that to happen either. But you're going to hire this part-time person, and you're going to have to do a few things. You're going to have to agree on, is this a seasonal job, right? Obviously, you've done this before you've hired them, I hope. But is it a seasonal job? Is it, you know, string to harvest? Are you bringing them on full-time during that? So full-time seasonal? So is it 40-plus hours a week, or is it part-time seasonal? Is it part-time annual, which also exists? What is it that you're going to do? What do you need? And so making sure you understand what you need versus what you want is very important up front, because typically what I see happen is if someone hires their first employee or their first usually hourly farm labor person, they realize that, wow, this is really, really valuable. I'm so happy I have this person. They will either drive that person to do more and more and more, but not provide them more in return, or they'll start just hiring a bunch of people that they truly can't really afford. And so I think that's your first pitfall in hiring your first person. You've already made a decision that I have to hire somebody to go do these things because I don't have time to do it myself for whatever that reason is. Ideally, whatever you're going to do, be spending your time on, will more than offset the cost of having somebody doing these other things on your behalf. But how much time are you expecting of them? And you have to be very clear with them that it's like, yeah, I'll pay you part-time, you know, 20 hours a week. All right, but what does that mean? Does that mean 4 hours a day or whatever, regardless of what's happening in the season? Does that mean, no, I'll pay you, you know, I'm expecting during training and during harvest that you're here basically 24/7. You know, what is that expectation?
Right, right. Are you allowed, based on that agreement, to say, oh, it's raining today, don't come in? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I needed to make money today. What do you mean don't come in?
Right.
So that goes both ways in terms of the expectation.
That's all laid out up front. Mm-hmm. You know, what is it I'm expecting of you? Again, back to the apple orchard. I was hourly. Now, granted, I have a graduate degree at this point. This was back in the late 90s, and I was making the equivalent of about $26,000 a year with a graduate degree in environmental biophysics. So I had that going for me. But it was like, okay, we're going to pay you hourly. There's, if you say 52 weeks in a year, there's 40 hours in a week, blah, 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 blah. You're going to get, you know, 2,080 hours of work time for that 25 grand. I know it's a ridiculously low amount of money. Let's just roll with it. But what they did is
even then. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but you know, hey, I wanted to work at my degree and blah, blah, blah. There's a whole lot of reasons I learned a lot, but anyway, this idea of, okay, there's 20, 80 hours in a year. We know we're far less busy in the wintertime. So therefore we're going to not have you coming in as many hours, but we're going to front load those hours during the production season. So yeah, at the end of the year, you're actually getting paid for full time, but you're going to be working like a dog, you know, during harvest and production season, because you're going to be working 60, 70 hours a week.
Wow.
Understanding that you're going to make a whole lot more money during that period than you will like in December and January, when you're maybe working 20 hours a week. You got to decide how you're going to run that. Is that part-timer going to be, yeah, you know what? On average, you're going to be part-time. On average, over those 4 months, you're going to get X number of hours, but I expect you to be working full-time, you know, 5, 6, 7 days a week during harvest for 10 or 12 hours a day. You better be damn upfront with them about that. And the things you need to consider there are, yeah, I may be paying you less during, let's say, July and June. You may only be getting 20 hours a week, and then I'm paying you whatever the base rate is. I'm going to pay you $15 an hour. But what are your state's and federal requirements for overtime pay?
Right. Right. Just because it balances out to a 40-hour-a-week job over the course of the year. Overtime is overtime. It's measured weekly, so not measured annually.
Yeah. So in that pay period, did they go overtime? And if they did, what is the minimum regulated overtime rate? And you have to figure that into your calculations if you're paying an hourly wage. There's a way around that.
Ooh.
I'm all about the loophole.
Is there a dark web version of this podcast they have to listen to? Or can you say that out loud?
Yeah, I can say this out loud. It's called contractor.
Ah, yes.
If you hire an individual as a part-time employee, right now you're doing things like, even if they are part-time, you're doing things like Social Security withholding. This is, again, the United States. You've got workers' comp insurance that you have to cover. There's those business aspects. But frankly, that's not that big of a deal. So don't let that be a barrier. Don't be freaked out by needing to do that. It's not at all difficult. And we can talk about that later. Heck, become a member of the Discord and bring it up there. We're happy to talk about it. If you're going to go with a contract laborer is like saying, okay, how much will it cost me to have you do this work between, let's say, April and September? And this is everything that needs to be done. And I'm paying you as a contractor. Now, as a contractor, you cover your own insurance. You get hurt, it's your fault. You deal with all of your unemployment, all your taxes, all that kind of stuff. I'm just going to pay you a flat rate. There's some pitfalls there that you have to, you know, the government can come back and say, yeah, you're actually paying them an hourly wage. They're not a contractor because you were providing the tools and you were telling them what they needed to do and how they needed to do it, blah, blah, blah. So there's some things you got to be careful with there. But this idea of saying, yeah, I'm basically buying you for the season. How much is it going to cost? You might be like, hey, I like that idea. It's really hard to land on what the requirements are. And if they're a contract employee, you need to write a contract saying what they're bidding on, quote unquote, that they're bidding on this much time during this phase of the year, this much time during that phase of the year. This is what is expected of them. And then agree on a fee for service. That's another way to do it.
Interesting.
I've done it both ways.
Yep.
I usually started off as a flat out contract laborer. Say, okay, yeah, I want to hire you for 20 hours a week worth of work. In general, this is what needs to be done. How you go about doing it is up to you. So if I know there's 20 hours worth of work to do in a week and you want to pull 2 10-hour days, knock yourself out.
Okay.
But if I need you there four hours a day, so a half a day for 5 days, you need to spell that out too. That's part of the contract. But there may be time where you're like, okay, it's Wednesday, and the 20 hours that I thought was going to take you this week, you finished in 8. You've got them coming in for 3 more days that week. that you're going to pay them to be doing stuff for. So you better make sure you have stuff for them to do.
Yeah, there's that too. If you've got an agreement, you've got no work for them.
Depends on what kind of boss you are,
but you got to pay them.
Right, right. If they're contract, you can't just say, no, don't come in today. Mm-hmm. You can't do that because, you know, it's in the contract. As you get bigger and you have, let's say, 4 or 5 seasonal part-time people and it's raining out and you were going to weed, you're like, well, don't come in today. But you're paying them hourly, so when they're not there, you're not paying them. If they're a contract employee, depending on what their contract says, they may be like, well, I've got 20 hours a week, whether I come in or not. Then you're like, well, I guess you're coming in and I'm going to find something for you to do.
Right.
And then there's your salaried employee, which is a whole different story. But mm-hmm. That's how you start. You start with usually with a contract labor, simple, you know, I'm going to pay this kid $15 an hour to come over and weed my hop yard. And you're going to do it out of pocket. You're going to do it under the table. Everybody does it. And that's okay as long as you're paying less in the United States, less than $5,000 a year.
Yep. If you're done with the mechanics, I want to pull back a little bit to something that we kind of glossed over early on, which you said, you know, typically it's someone close to you.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole element here around when you do start paying people, is it, you know, a friend? Is it the kid of a friend? Is it, you know, ne'er-do-well brother-in-law who's looking for a break? you know what? There are, I'm not sure how to say what I'm trying to say here, but I think you know where I'm going, which is the selection of that labor is important, because if it's your buddy and, hey, I'm gonna pay you X dollars to come do this stuff, and your buddy shows up and walks around with a beer in his hand and oh yeah, I'll take care of it. Oh yeah, I'll take care of it, and just hangs out. Like this is real. This is big boy business time.
Well, that's on you.
It is on you. It is on you.
But you didn't set the expectation.
Correct. Correct. I mean, that you're probably not going to get that situation with an unknown quantity person that you're hiring through Craigslist. You know, they're not going to follow you around with a beer in their hand. At least I hope not.
Well, Craigslist, you never know. I've had a couple of times.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Fair. Maybe Craigslist wasn't the way to go.
Yeah.
But you, my point just being that hiring labor to take care of a specific job and to give you to buy that time back once again,
mm-hmm.
this is usually not the friends and family plan. You can do it that way, but to your point, the expectations must be there. This is not social hour, because the worst thing that can happen is you bring someone on who you're paying and all they end up doing is becoming a distraction to you because you guys are hanging out talking the whole time.
Right. That and
that's on you.
Well, it's on you. Or they're the opposite. So I shouldn't say opposite. Another potential there is the person you hire requires so much micromanaging, you can't get anything else done.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're just like, it's normal to feel when you're first onboarding somebody to be like, it's just more efficient if I do it myself.
Yeah. And that may be true in the short term. Yeah.
But geez, get over yourself. You're not that important. So train them up, get them confident in what they're doing, and you can walk away. But if you're like, yeah, I'll give you, you know, I just need somebody to pull weeds, and they're out there and they're pulling a weed here, pulling a weed there, playing on their phone, doing blah, blah, blah. That's on you.
Yep.
It requires you to be there and to say, look, no, you know, phone goes in the pocket. They may not like it, but those are your rules. You're the boss. Sometimes you got to find somebody else. That's just the way it works.
It's sometimes easier to not bring on someone you know. You can be a little more distanced that way in terms
Correct.
Of being able to. It's hard to give constructive feedback to someone that you have a social relationship with.
Yes, or it's like, you know, you hire one of your best friend's kids, and you know you catch him screwing around, mm-hmm. and you've got to fire him or discipline him or do something like that, and now you're worried about impacting your friendship. It's just, it's messy. I prefer not to do it.
It is. I know I've told the story of the intern I had working for me 1 year in an office who took a nap at his desk.
Mm-hmm.
And when one of my other employees woke him and said, "What are you doing?" He was like, "Well, you know, Greg's in meetings and I can't ask him this question, so I'm just resting." And it's like, this is not, this resting. Is not what you do.
I'm sorry you're so plum tuckered out, Puddin'. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love it. There was one part-timer we had in the summertime. We would catch him sleeping under the tree all the time.
Oh, my God. Oh, see, all the time, though, isn't twice the end right there?
Well, so it would be like he would go over, it would start off as like it was his lunch break, and he'd go over and sit under the tree and fall asleep. And then it would be like, okay, well, he's taking a break, because, I mean, you got to take breaks, right? And even part-time people get mandatory breaks. So they go, anytime that guy would stop moving,
he'd fall asleep.
His eyes were closed. And so I had to be very careful and be like, I can't give this guy a job in the shade because...
Oh, yeah, he'll sit down.
He's done. If he sits down, he's done. But his high speed was amble, maybe saunter. But he was reliable. I knew what I was going to get out of him.
See, and I'm just dying to see the flow chart and where amble and saunter fall on that mix with all of the other speeds. I think that's probably a more accurate thing than the old flavor wheel that we always talk about. I would love to see how you gauge those.
As an aside, so we would have some of our charter growers be like, I don't understand how you're saying it costs you this much to do this. You know, it costs you this much labor to string twine. Mm-hmm. It costs you this much labor. No, that would be training. This much, how many people, how long is it going to take me to train? And I'd tell them what my equation was, and they'd be like, okay, and they plan on it, and they'd just be nowhere close. And so I would go, if they were close enough, I would go there while they were training, and I would train beside them. And they were just like, wow, you work hard.
It's like, yeah, because I'd rather get it done in 8 hours than 12.
I'm like, there's no reason training one plant should take you 5 minutes. It should take you less than 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. Right? And so what are you doing? You're sitting down there, cross-legged on your butt, training, you know, untying these binds. You know, I was like, come on, this is not gardening, right? Get her done. And it's just like, wow, I'm tired at the end of the day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You should be.
Yeah, if you're not, then you're doing it wrong.
So there's this idea that, yeah. Anyway, again, setting expectations.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So to your point at the beginning, you know, and you told me I wasn't selling it, and we spent the last couple of minutes talking about all the things that go wrong.
There's another episode.
Yeah. Oh my God, wouldn't that be fun? All the things we've seen labor
dumb
do.
Shit my employees have done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the first story will be about me, you know, stringing twine.
Yeah.
Well, you did that to me on
purpose.
That's
dumb shit my partners have done.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's your other podcast.
Right.
My, oh my. So yeah, bottom line, wrapping it up in a bow here. Don't be afraid to buy that time back. Mm-hmm. You've got to make sure you can afford it, but you've also got to make sure you can't not afford it.
Well,
did I say that
you,
right?
You said that right. And I think that if you feel that your business is experiencing even a modicum of success and things are going in the trajectory that is positive, and you are not paying people to do things to free up your time to allow you to do things that add more value, you are losing.
Yeah. You're not investing in the stringing of twine. You're investing in the expansion and the higher level activities that you then get to do. These ideas just come into